Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Shattered Innocence. My name is Darlene J. Clark. I am the author of Shattered Innocence, the book which can be found at Amazon.com. Abuse affects our lives in so many ways. What do we do when we are too scared to tell? We have trusted someone and they did not help. Sometimes someone asks, what did you do to get punished this way? Abuse is abuse. Abuse is not punishment. Abuse is torture, crippling, and debilitating. What advice would you give others to help them through the horrendous memories? Are you there for a person or are you part of the knife in your friend or relative's back that you may have turned a blind eye to it? Are you claiming to advocate against abuse, to condemn the people who tell and share their stories? Do you want to be a part of the solution or part of the problem? Let's stand united and discuss ways in which we may help others. What ways have helped you in your healing journey? Are you in a constant battle fighting the negative forces within? Stop it. Let's encourage one another. Are you an officer in the judicial system not doing your job to help the victim? That means you're not doing your duty. Your duty is to serve and protect. How do we open the public's eyes so they can acknowledge and feel the need to help protect the children and our citizens? The children are our future. You matter. To call in to encourage Jessica, who is my guest tonight, the number is 563-999-3517. Jessica Brown, she's an author, a poet, a thriver, an advocate, and an overcomer. Jessica Green Brown is a West Virginia native, born and raised in Huntington. She has a BSW degree from Marshall University and is now applying to pursue a dual master's degree in social work and public administration at Marshall University. Jessica also has a pre-apprenticeship manufacturing certification. With a deep passion for helping empower and inspire people to thrive, overcome, and be resilient despite their adversity through sharing her life story, philanthropy, writing, public speaking, and advocacy. She's been a featured guest speaker in podcasts, videos, blog series, and radio shows shared and broadcasted globally since 2021. She is a humanitarian, an artist, a published poet, and author who's been quoted by Resilience, Advocates for Ending Violence, and Foster Care United. She was Volunteer of the Year for SESA for 2021 and completed the Women Igniting Change Program in 2022. Currently, she volunteers as a representative for the state of West Virginia for the nonprofit organization Foster Kids United, and she is the chair of the board of directors for I Believe You. She is working on writing an autobiography, studying Spanish, French, Hindi, and Arabic, as well as for law admission tests. Her life story overview is about to be published in Faces of Foster Care, Foster Care 3, April 18, 2024. Jessica enjoys swimming, reading, writing, dressing up, decorating crafts such as calligraphy, quilting, knitting, crochet, painting, drawing, sewing, scrapbooking, and making handmade cards. Without further ado, welcome, Jessica. Thanks for being a guest on Shattered Innocence. How are you doing today?
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We're going to let you go ahead and do whatever you want to do. Start however. This is your show today. So I'm just going to let you take the reins. And every once in a while, if I got a question, might butt in. Or if we have a caller that might want to speak to you, we'll give it about 30 minutes maybe. But I might be butting in a little bit in between there asking questions.
Okay. Well, first I think I want to share my artist profile from a poem that I had published before I turned 18 to give a little background on me. My artist profile said, I've been writing since I was 10. I was abused and I write poetry so that abused children like myself knows they are not alone. And it also can put into words what they cannot seem to. I'm a survivor, and I don't want abused children to feel alone. As an artist profile, whenever my poem A Child's Hell was published, I recently looked back on that and read it, and it seemed very similar to my current quote in 2000 I came up with in 2021. Which is, what the hell, I've lived, nothing could stop me from chasing my dreams. Give me hell, I'll rise to the challenge. I may fall, but I'll always get back up and keep fighting. I will rise. I am insatiable fire. I not only survived my past, but I overcame it. If I can, you can too, and do even more. You are not alone. There is very distinct similarities between that artist profile and my quote that I developed in 2021. It basically, I never changed. I kept working towards the same goal from a teenager on. It basically predicted what I am doing now.
That's amazing. That shows your resilience.
It's just, I didn't realize what until I reread my artist profile how deeply rooted, I guess, that was inside me.
Yes. You are a fighter for sure. For someone that knows a lot of your story, I know you're a fighter, survivor. You're not going to just sit there. You actually care. And I know a lot of things that happened to you, and these things should have not happened to you or anyone, but you as a child did not deserve the things that happened to you. You deserve to be protected and loved for the person that you are, for the child you were.
I wouldn't change anything. I really have no regrets because I feel that my story has the potential to help other people. And if my story helps even just one other person, whether through inspiration or something else, that gives it purpose and meaning, and that, to me, is worth it.
Right.
It makes everything that I went through worth it to me. That was all I wanted for my closure. And that's why I shared my story.
That's similar to how I felt like I have to, you know, my life seems meaningless or nothing unless I get out there and I try to make a change. And that's just the way I feel about it as well. But I know you got a lot more drive and go, desire, a driving, spitfire type of thing behind you. I didn't have the fortitude. Huh?
The thought process that went into it was, well, there was a lot of people that really helped me, and that added to my resilience. So how could I thank the people that helped me the most, who shared
right.
their heart, who lifted me up, who encouraged me, who, you know, helped me when they didn't have to because nobody owed me a thing. And the way I saw it was if I could pay it forward and try to help somebody else, that would probably be the best way to thank them, is by passing it on.
Very well said.
But anyway, I can share my story. I'll try to keep it in chronological order, so it's easier to follow. But it is, I would recommend a trigger warning.
Yes, trigger warning for sure, everyone.
Yes. It can be very triggering for some people, and some people can't handle it. It makes a lot of people go silent as well. So, well, I guess without further ado, I'll get started. My name is Jessica.
Okay.
I was born in Huntington, West Virginia, with two bottom teeth, and I had a dental visit the day I was born. I won a coloring contest when I was 2 years old. By the time I was in first grade, I was doing my own homework for school without supervision or help, despite the abusive circuits around me. My mom was a state employee. My dad was honorably released ex-Navy. I endured severe child sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, domestic violence, and complex trauma at the hands of my biological father and older brother. I have been raped. I have been beaten. I have been silenced and abused in about every way possible, time and again, by men. I was isolated and was not permitted to have friends, which was strictly enforced by whatever means necessary. My only friends were cats. A radio played in the basement constantly so the neighbors couldn't hear her screams. My dad would tell me not to cry because it didn't hurt when he would beat me. There were constant battles with the neighbors where my dad would pull guns on the neighbors if they turned around in our driveway, which was at the end of a dead-end street. When I was 4 years old, my mom ended up getting pregnant, and my dad didn't want any more kids, so he kicked my mom in the stomach so hard that my baby brother was born full term with water on his brain dead. I only remember how devastated I was that I wasn't getting the baby brother. I remember being in the hospital that day that she had my little brother, and I was like, where is he? And I was playing with her hospital bed and stuff like that, and I was like, I was really mad. Because I wasn't going to get my baby brother. And I didn't actually find out what really transpired and why I didn't get my baby brother until many years later. I was an adult by then. My dad murdered my little brother and got away with it. The sexual abuse in my family was so commonplace in our household that I didn't even realize until fourth grade that something, that it was even wrong. It was just the way it was, and the only thing I knew. Breaking the forced silence I lived in and attempting to get help when I was 10 years old nearly cost me my life. But I knew I had to stop, and my dad was dangerous not only to me, but everyone. He was even a danger to himself. I initially reported the abuse to the CAP program. They are a program that comes into schools and does skits and plays to try to explain good touch, bad touch to children. I was 9 years old. Well, 8 or 9. I was in fourth grade. I remember I was in fourth grade. My age may have been 8 or 9. It gets a little iffy there because I have a May birthday. About 6 months later, I came from school knowing nothing, and my dad met me at the door with his .44 Magnum pacing the floors. I hid in the closet, which my mom coaxed me out of when she came home from work prior to CPS arriving. When the CPS worker arrived, I reiterated the allegations of sexual abuse despite being threatened with a gun by my dad. She watched him run at me while she was there. And then she left me there with him, telling him he had to leave. CPS never came back. 3 months later, my house burned down, January 31st, 1993. The day it burned down, my dad picked me up from the same school I told on him at. My mom came in, signed me out. He was waiting in the car. When I got out there, I was in hell. I was severely beaten numerous times for telling on my dad and trying to, quote, get him in trouble, as he called it.
And that's the way she looked at it too, right? Am I right?
What is it?
She treated you that way too. Like, how dare you tell on him?
No, my mom, no. She She honestly, I don't think she knew how to handle the situation. She still fed him. I watched him walk down the back stairs. The neighbors told me he was still there. He moved into the van outside our house. He never left. But my mom, I don't think she knew how to handle it because she wasn't in any kind of authoritative position anyway. She was petrified of the man.
I think everybody was petrified of him.
Everybody was scared of him, especially my mom. He told her that he would tie her to the back of his vehicle or one of our vehicles, and drag her down the road if she ever tried to leave him. And I have
and
no
he
doubt
would,
he would
too.
He would have very well followed through on that.
You even had neighbors that ended up moving to get away from his violence, right?
We had neighbors move out of the neighborhood completely because they were going to kill him. And they didn't want to go to jail over his behaviors. He wasn't worth it. They literally packed up, sold their house, and moved out of the neighborhood. And I'm still in contact with those people.
That helps to have extra validation from them as well, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, they remember him very well. You know, he even tried to write over the kids.
Their kids?
The neighborhood kids.
Mm.
He was a menace to everyone around him. He was a straight-up monster. The neighbors knew about the situation, but they refused to get involved. They were afraid of my dad. They didn't want to get shot. My family knew about the situation. They, too, refused to get involved. They told me to tell school. Everyone pushed it off to somebody else. I was shuffled from this person to that person. Go tell this person. Go tell that person. Nobody wanted to do anything. Nobody wanted to get involved. They were afraid my dad would shoot them. They told me to tell the school, and I was at a new school, you know, by the time I told. So, you know, let's burn down January 31st, 1993. It took X amount of time for us to find a house. We lived in a camper on the driveway. CPS, mind you, during all this time, never came back.
Wow.
We were on the driveway. We were showering.
They should have went ahead
and said,
hey, you know, he got a gun, you know, on her. They should have went and reported that and got you safe, you know, reported it to the police about him having a gun, you know, at you at gunpoint.
They just vanished into thin air. They vanished into thin air. They never came back. I literally had to change counties. I had to move houses. I had to change schools. Tell everyone, all the other kids at school, I was telling them what was going on at home. I was telling the other kids. And I think that's how I actually ended up getting help. Because I think one of them went home and told their parents what I had told them. And the parents called the police. I still, to this day, don't know who called the police. And the police officer that showed up was on a wild goose chase. He had no idea what was going on. He asked me if there was anything going on because somebody had called the police. That's when I reiterated my allegations yet again and told again. That's the day I was removed from my home thanks to a police officer in a wild goose chase and a very kind of concerned fifth grade teacher who happened to take an interest in me. I still have contact with the teacher as well. I looked her back up whenever I became an adult. To me, they were my heroes at 10 years old because they're the only ones
right.
who stepped up to help me. CPS showed up. They were called, obviously, by the police officer. They finally showed up. they were going to take me to get clothes. They parked across the street from my new house. And I flat out told him, I said, I'm not going in there. I said, he'll blow you away to get to me. That was my exact words. I said, you're more than welcome to go in there if you want to, but I don't recommend it. Mind you, I'm 19 years old at this point.
Right.
You know, I think I was 10 by then. It just,
I could imagine the kind of nightmares you had at night, too.
I don't remember them. They were night terrors. They tortured my grandmother. Whenever I stayed with her, I could not stay with her because the way I behaved in my sleep, I fought in my sleep, I gripped my teeth, grinded my teeth so bad that, and whenever I would fight in my sleep, it literally tormented her. I literally couldn't stay with her. She sent me next door to my aunt. But it was night terrors. I woke up, I didn't remember a thing.
Because sometimes your voice kind of fades out lower.
Mm-hmm. Well, whenever I was placed in kinship care, my dad knew where I was, and he was stalking me. My half-brother picked up where my dad left off, because he blamed me for the things my dad did to him. I reminded him of my dad. He called me Little Orville. And until the day he died in 2020, my half-brother made it his last mission to punish me for what my dad did to him. Everything from beating me with a belt in kinship care every morning before I went to school in fifth grade, to stealing my identity in college, to trying to kill me with a butcher knife on Thanksgiving Day when I was 17 years old. I was on a home visit from the group home I lived in. In kinship care, I tried to stay with my grandmother. My dad showed up on my grandmother's doorstep trying to get to me. My grandmother met him at her front door with a shotgun and told him she would blow his brains all over the sidewalk if he didn't leave. She had breast cancer. She was very sick. And she couldn't handle how I acted, like I said, you know, whenever I acted out in my sleep from the trauma I'd experienced. She sent me next door to live with my aunt, and that's when my brother started taking a belt to me every morning before I went to school. That was my wake-up call every morning. Hello, I get a belt. I started running away. Whenever I was in kinship care, I was never asked why I was running away. But my aunt's solution was to tie me up with a belt to one of her dresses. I wriggled loose from it, ran away again. When that attempt failed, my uncle took a belt to me himself to try to stop me from running away. That didn't work either. In kinship care, my philosophy was if no one knew where I was, my dad couldn't find me and my half-brother couldn't beat me with a belt because he'd have to find me first. I was safer alone, on my own, away from my family in the woods. I had peace there. Nobody hurt me there. And to me, that was a vacation.
Did you find other animals in the woods, too? Or did you have a couple cats you took with you or anything like that?
No. At that point, I didn't have my animals. I had to leave them all behind whenever my house burned down.
Oh, wow.
Every
best
one of my
friends
were abandoned when my house burned down. There was nowhere where I could put them. They just went stray. Whenever I was 11, after I returned to live with my mom, that was after kinship care. My mom had been in the battered women's shelter during my time in kinship care. And she was going through her own set of help, with my dad stalking her at her work and everything else, and she was trying to maintain her job. So she was going through her own set of help from my dad because he knew where she was, too. But she still had to show up every day for work, and he showed up causing a scene at her job.
Right, and she still knew that threat that he made about tying her to a vehicle and dragging her.
Oh, yeah. And he very well could have followed through with it had he got a hold of her. I don't know what all transpired. I wasn't there. But I know she was going through her own set of hells, is all I can say there. At 11, after I returned to live with my mom, my dad would frequently show up and try to break down the back door to get to us. My mom would panic and freeze, so much so she literally could not move. I had to call the police, but every time, by the time the police showed up, my dad was long gone. They never caught him. My mom had a domestic violence petition against him that was supposed to protect us, but what were we supposed to do with that piece of paper? Throw it at him when he came after us? Because police never showed up on time. Never caught him. What protection did we have? You know, it wasn't just me that almost got killed. Didn't kill.
Right.
My brother and my mom, they were in equally as much danger as I was and equally as defenseless as I was. I was just the youngest. Not only did I not get protection, none of us did.
Exactly.
We were put in.
I want to remind people. Want to remind people to call in and support Jessica at 563-999-3517. Again, 563-999-3517.
My mom and my brother, and I went to Camden Park. It's a local little theme park, kind of like Kings Island, just small. It's got little rides and stuff like that. It's just a smaller version of Kings Island, basically. It's a little theme park. My dad showed up on a motorcycle when we were leaving. Just popped up out of nowhere.
Tried to intimidate y'all.
And my mom and my brothers and I all started running away. We were running to try to get to the car. You know, they kept going. I stopped. I got tired of them. I turned. And I walked right up to him. And I told him to leave us the hell alone because he's not supposed to be anywhere around us. Much to my surprise, he actually turned around and left.
Yeah, he's not used to somebody standing up to him like that.
Oh, he had had somebody stand up to him before, but probably not 11. And they definitely weren't female. I don't know what, you know, what. But after that, he stopped talking to me, to my knowledge. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder at the age of 11. After I was placed in my first foster home. That foster home did not work out because my foster mom thought I was going to run away. So she grabbed me, dragged me back in her house, and I fought back. So we ended up with full restraint. And I refused to live with her after that. I was removed the next morning and placed in my second foster home. That one ended only because I was returned home by CPS to my biological mother at the age of 12.
Back into the frying pan, huh?
My second foster mom went above and beyond. She was there to comfort my mom when I was dying in the hospital from a suicide attempt after I was sent home by CPS from her house. She heard on the police scanner that something was going on. She came by on the off chance it was me, and it was. I guess you could call it instinct. I guess you could call it a gut feeling she had, I guess, that it might be me. She showed up just to check to see if it was me. Sure enough, it was. Her gut instinct was dead on. After my mom's boyfriend severely beat me, with my mom standing right there and doing nothing, I didn't feel worthy of even sleeping in a bed, so I overdosed on half a bottle of sleeping medication and slept in my closet. My mom woke up to me seizing in the closet. And then I've already went over, you know, where my foster mom, you know, heard the call on the scanner. But she showed up. And my mom's boyfriend at the time actually told my mom whenever I was in the hospital dying that she should just let me die and went and cheated on her that night.
Well,
while I was in the hospital, I heard that in safe custody. That sounded great to me. So when I was 13, I refused to go back home to live with my mom and was returned to safe custody. I was no longer a CPS case. I became a juvenile, basically a juvenile delinquent because I refused to go home. I was incorrigible, and they considered me an out-of-control child. So
that's
I was
flat
no
risk.
CPS case. I was a youth services case, which I was perfectly fine with.
Exactly.
At least a ticket. That seemed like a pretty good deal to me. I'll be a youth service case? Okay. I'll be an out-of-control kid? Okay. But I won't get hit? Deal to me.
Yes.
The judge assigned to my youth services case told my mom it was the worst case of abuse he'd ever seen. I also, during that time, met my CASA worker, Bob. I was a firecracker. My first thoughts of him were, oh, no, not another pervert. That was my mentality at 13. I thought all men were perverts.
Yes.
Being the firecracker that I was, that was my thought process. But through his advocacy and relentless efforts, he actually changed my view of men. He was instrumental through his work in getting me justice. He showed me by example that not all men are perverts. While I was never able to return to my second foster home due to no beds being available, I remained connected and in contact with my second set of foster parents. They actually attended my graduation whenever I graduated from college.
That's amazing.
As did my mom. My mom missed my high school graduation, and I cried all the way through it. But she did attend my college graduation. So I was placed in three more foster homes after that. Following a traumatic and triggering experience in my third foster home, I was personally just done with foster care. My fourth foster home was a temporary placement. My fifth home, I literally refused to go into their home until they removed me. I was just done. So after my fifth foster home, they removed me from there. Kind of rubbed into my face that she was going to put me in a lockdown facility. So I said, okay, you have to catch me first. I jumped out of her moving vehicle, ran away, in the middle of nowhere, mind you. I was 13 still at this time. And, you know, whenever they caught me, of course, they put me in lockdown. But the day I got there, they had to chase me down too. So I put up a good fight when they put me in lockdown. But, yeah, I was there about 9 months. I mean, I was a wild card whenever I was a teenager. I was not easy street. I did not make it easy on them. But
well, they didn't support
that,
you or try to protect you all the time. So it was hard to trust anybody really taking care of you. A lot of people were being violent towards you. They kept violating you.
Yeah. Whenever I was in lockdown, there was a time period that I quit eating. They watched me in the shower. I did not like that. There was a time period where I wouldn't get out of bed for a long period of time. I even went to the timeout room and refused to get up, period. And one of the guys that worked there put a radio by my ear, you know, full blast, just to try to annoy me and get me up anyway, and it didn't work.
Right.
You know, I went through a lot of depression and stuff like that in lockdown. I don't think that they should have done that. I don't think they were allowed to do that. whenever I was in there, but there was not really much I could do. But anyway, my dad was caught after eluding justice for nearly 5 years. When I was 14, I went to Golden Girl Group Home, where I spent the next 4.5 years, during which time I testified against my dad in court at age 15. He was sentenced to 45 to 105 years without the possibility of parole because his psychological found him to be an ingrained pedophile incapable of rehabilitation, which was the terms of any parole he would ever be eligible for. His sentence was to be served consecutively, not concurrently. He was only charged for the sexual abuse of my half-brother and myself, not for anything else he did.
Well,
my dad died in prison of COVID and underlying health conditions in November 2020. Now I'm with penitentiary. Prior to his death, we conversed via letters for a couple of years. I got my closure on the situation and was able to come to terms with it. I was able to forgive him for what he did, but he was where he belonged. Despite missing most of middle school because I was moved around so much in state's custody, I never fell behind. I was even in advanced classes whenever I did go to school in middle school, actually. I still graduated high school with high honors on time. I had 13 poems published by the time I turned 18. And what I read at the beginning was my artist profile from one of those poems that was published. I was never eligible for adoption, and I was never adopted. I aged out, 17. I was placed in the permanent legal and physical custody of Golden Girl Group Home. That is my childhood home, and the first and only safety and stability I knew in my childhood. I almost decided not to go to college. I did not think I was ready. I wanted to go to junior college. The group home enrolled me anyway, especially since I started college and took English 101 as a senior in high school anyway. I attended Marshall University. I started out in remedial math. I couldn't even type at the time whenever I started college. I had to teach myself. And then, despite making a C in my introduction to social work course, I declared social work my major. I made straight A's through the core social work curriculum courses and graduated with honors. A 3.34 overall GPA with my bachelor's degree in social work. I also pulled 19 hours most semesters while I was in the social work core curriculum as well. And I also did volunteer work for across the 2 years while I was in college. My senior thesis was over 400 pages on the correlation between domestic violence, child abuse, and animal abuse, and it was sent to the president of Marshall University. But I also, go ahead.
I would love to have been able to still have that and share that around to people. You know, I think that would be very inspirational still, other people reading your literature.
I do share it. I do share my poetry and also have published articles, but they weren't written until 2021, my articles weren't. All my poetry is from whenever I was a teenager, though, and I still have it. And I do share it.
Writing was your vice, too, Zach, also, right?
What is it?
Writing was your vice, also, right?
That's how I healed. That's how I coped with my abuse. That was my form of expression, was writing. That's how I healed. Unfortunately, therapy didn't work for me because my first experience with a therapist went to hell in a handbasket. She started talking trash about my mom, and that really got under my skin. So I was an 11-year-old that literally told her to go fuck herself, and I ran away.
Huh.
Excuse my language, but that was literally my exact words.
Right.
Yeah, she got to see another side of me that she didn't want to see. And
like,
it was
you
bad
were there for your healing. You didn't need to hear the negative about your mom because you knew what kind of stuff
she
had.
I was talking about my dad, too, but what she was saying was true. I couldn't really say anything about what she was saying about my dad, but what she was saying about my mom was complete bullshit. She didn't know what she was talking about. And I told her she was bullshit. I told her she was bullshit. Fuck you. You know. I've always had a mouth on me. I've always been very outspoken. And it probably got me in some trouble. So...
Well, that was your strong suit because in no other way, they wouldn't let you have your voice. They wouldn't let you be yourself. They kept beating you. They kept restraining you. No matter what, they were going against you. And when CPS did not even help you, when your daddy held you at gunpoint, and all of a sudden, they didn't even
go back and say,
I'm calling the police, you know, hey, she's got, her daddy's got her at gunpoint or nothing. You were at your own vices. It's like, excuse me, what's a kid supposed to do?
They didn't know about the guns. They didn't do their job either.
Exactly.
They have one job. They are protection services for a reason. I was a child. They failed to protect. That's in
exactly.
Their freaking title. They failed. That's their one job. One job. Child protection. They failed to protect. They failed.
You know, they felt that scared. They should have still went to the law enforcement so the law could do something about it, but they didn't do it.
They didn't do anything. They finished.
That's another
apparently there was
point
some
of when the CPS
7
was not doing their duty.
Whatever. Through the cracks, I guess you could say. That's what I guess it's called, is falling through the cracks. Yeah. That was a crack I fell through.
It's a shame. And then they would have said, you would have been another statistic, basically, had you not survived. But still, you are a statistic because the CPS felon went on the felon point and them not doing their duty. Serve and protect, and let the police as well. Because, you know, there had to be a lot of adults that knew about it and still did nothing.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of people that knew. A lot. Nobody wanted to get lost. I wasn't silent about it at all. And I was beaten for it. It still didn't shut me up. Beaten for it again. Still didn't shut me up.
They asked what kind of job your dad had, so I can imagine that would have been torturous to anybody. Oh, it didn't work at all?
No, my mom was a breadwinner. She was out working while he was sexually abusing us and beating us off.
Whoa.
He would go behind my mom with a white glove when she cleaned the house. She was responsible for that, too. He didn't clean. He didn't cook. That was all my mom. My mom did it all. She was superwoman. He laid on his ass and sexually abused us and beat the hell out of us. That was his job.
It's a shame
he didn't
that,
want to pay child support for his. He didn't want to pay child support for my sister either from his previous relationship that was not quite 18 yet. So my mom had to pay his child support, too.
Wow. Deadbeat.
Oh, yeah. So he was a real, real, he was a real winner.
So he had probably abused her.
He did go on to her house. He knew how to spend money.
So he beat her priorly to in the first relationship as well, probably be the first wife?
Well, I've heard stories. I can't really, you know, say because I wasn't there, but I've heard horror stories. And my my brother from my dad's previous marriage, literally vouched for everything that I said about my dad, and we were not raised together in the same household ever. He was an adult by the time I was thought of. He commented on my first video that I shared publicly, my brother did, and he vouched for everything that I said about our dad. And we were never in the same household. I've met him twice in my life.
I'm glad he didn't turn out anything like
very similar.
The daddy, you know what I mean? I am glad he didn't.
When it went to trial, every one of my dad's kids were summoned to testify for him in court. Do you know how many of for him in court whenever he went to trial?
How many?
Out of five from his previous marriage. Mind you, my half-brother and I were the victims in this trial.
Right.
So there were I had five siblings from his previous marriage that were summoned to court to testify for him. How many do you think testified for him?
None.
Not a single one.
All of them validated, corroborated your story, right?
But at the same time, fast forward, after his conviction and sentencing, one of my siblings tried to get him out of prison, even tried to go to the law school to get him out of prison.
Wow.
He came down with cancer and died. And then one of my sisters, while he was in prison, paid for his expenses the whole time he was in prison and hid his ashes after he died and get a traditional closure. So, you know, but they refused to testify for it. So it makes no sense to me. Why would you not testify for him in a trial? But after he's convicted, flip the switch. Mind you, I haven't talked to that sister since I was 14. And during a phone call, she told me he tried the same sexual abuse on her. Yet now she denies it. And the reason she wouldn't testify for him was the same thing.
Right. How convenient that when he's serving time in jail, then she wants to deny it and then want to make you try to go back and reiterate and take the charges away so that to get him out of jail so that he could continue his sicko ways, you know what I'm saying?
So I don't understand that mentality. That's just one of those things where I had to get creative. That's why I'm sharing my story. I had to get creative to get my my closure. To me, sharing my story is my closure because it, one, was who helped me by paying it forward to possibly potentially help somebody else who could relate to my story or be inspired by my story. And that, to me, is my closure because it gives it purpose and meaning.
Exactly.
It didn't happen for nothing.
So the brother that you ended up having that lived with y'all was another child your mom had with?
Nope.
Another man?
My mom had one from my half-brother that lived with us. I met when I was two. His dad had kidnapped him. And she actually had to go through John Walsh, if I'm not mistaken, to try to get him back. So I didn't meet him until I was 2 years old, my half-brother that I lived with that was in the trial with me.
He might have been better staying with his daddy than being with y'all.
Yeah, he would have been. Unfortunately, I hate to say that, but yeah, he would have definitely been. And I guarantee you, he wouldn't have been the monster that he became if he had been abused by my dad.
And it's bad that he accused you and mistreated you that way.
It's unfortunate, but I understood. My brother, he literally let his demons eat him alive. They ate him from the inside out until it destroyed him. Well, I watched helplessly as he did it. I don't know which was more torturous, watching him destroy himself or what he tried to do to me. Because his hate ate him alive. His anger devoured him. When he died, he was only 41 years old. He already had failing kidneys. He was addicted to drugs. He had Hep C, he had HIV, and he had a shrinking brain. And that's just what I know of. He was only 41 years old.
Wow.
That is a tragedy.
Was he ever had a father himself?
He was sterile. He had Klinefelters.
Yeah, what?
For female gene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I never hated him. A lot of people probably think that I do. I understood he was angry. I never could understand why he took it out of me. But there was nothing I could do, you know, to stop him from hating me. So I just had to avoid him. And there was nothing I could do to help him either. Because I was his primary target. When he would get volatile or violent, he wanted to attack me. So I had to steer clear. Let's see here.
I want to remind people to call in at 563-999-3517.
But after I graduated from Marshall, I got my social work board exam and got my license. I worked for CPS for about a year after I graduated from college. And then shortly after I left CPS working for them, I got sick. My brain kind of shut down. I lost reality. And it disabled me. That was in 2009. I went through college. I went through working CPS for a year, being on call a lot during the time I was in CPS. So I was working a lot, like 24 hours. I would not sleep enough. I was not on my medication for the bipolar disorder that I have either. And the combination of everything, I think, just kind of my brain just gave out. Rebooted like a computer. I think it had all it could take at that time. And to this day, I'm still not conscious or in reality unmedicated. I'm a vegetable without my medicine. I have to have medication to function. It's permanent. It permanently disabled me. Everything I do is despite the disability that I have. I do the best I can with cards I've been dealt, basically. Even my body broke down whenever my brain shut down. I broke out with cystic acne all over my body. It was awful. My body mimics my brain, basically. Everything broke down at once. So physically and mentally, I broke down. And it took years for doctors to find the right combination of medication to treat the condition that I have. It's controlled now. But I do require medication to function. But despite being legally disabled, what you read is what I've become. You know, what you read at the beginning. Things I do, things of that nature. And things I'm trying to do, obviously, as well. But my mission is to use my negative situation and flip it into a positive that will help other people. I want to recognize the hands and hearts who helped me become who I am. And that's my way of giving back for the opportunity I was given and the chance I got from being helped. Quite frankly, I was hell on wheels. I was not easy to handle. And the people who helped me have the best hearts in the freaking world. You know, they put up with a lot for me and didn't even know what was going on with me. Because I didn't have the words to speak. That's why I said what I did in my artist profile. If you remember what I said, put into words what they cannot seem to, because that was me. I did not have the words to speak what had happened to me. I was not silenced at that point. I could share it, but I couldn't share it because there just were no words. I couldn't find the words to describe what had happened to me whenever I was a teenager. It came out in my writing. That's why I used writing as a coping mechanism. It was a tool. It was an artistic, creative way of expressing what had happened to me. And one of those things, like the artist profile, the poem that was published was The Child's Hell. I've got it right here if you want to hear it.
Sure, please.
And it'll give you an example of what I mean by my creative expression of the things I experienced coming out in my poetry rather than, you know, me running up to somebody and saying, this happened to me, you know, because I just didn't have it in me to tell anybody, you know. Haunting memories that fill the mind. This is called A Child's Hell. Haunting memories that fill the mind. Walls seem such vile deceit. As if possessed by putrid evil, anger overwhelms every inch, muffling screams of pure anguish, never ceasing beyond walls of so many violent secrets. Horror scars the very foundation, a living hell witnessed only by blind eyes of pure stone. No voice could describe such misery. That's one of my poems, the one that was published whenever I wrote that artist profile. So,
wow.
But if you can picture this scenario in your mind, as far as the child's hell, my poem, I remember getting down on my hands and knees whenever my dad was angry, and I would pray to God. I mean, I would literally pray to God for him to save me, and there was no saving me. And I was probably 3 and 4 years old at that time. So, you know, without giving all the details like I did in my Unfiltered Stories interview, yeah, that just probably gives you an idea. I don't want it to be too triggering. But I want to empower and inspire and encourage people to to not only survive, but overcome and thrive. Despite any adversity they face, chase their dreams. No matter what people go through, they can rise above it.
I know a lot of, when I was reading your bio, people probably wondered also what was SCSA, because she was a volunteer of the year for that, for 2021. I'll let you talk about that as well.
That is the Survivors of Childhood Sex Abuse Organization. Yes, I was the volunteer of the year for them that year. I've parted ways with them since then.
Yes.
But they are an organization still, to my knowledge. So.
Yes, and what's this Women Igniting Change program that you were in?
That was a wonderful program, and Robin Jorgensen is the founder and CEO. She's a wonderful person. She takes basically ideas from seed to full organization and gives you guidelines to follow to build that.
Nice. You said you were quoted by Resilience Advocates for Ending Violence as well?
Yes, and Foster Kids United. It's that quote that I mentioned earlier at the beginning. That was after my artist profile quote. With the hell I've lived, nothing could stop me from chasing my dreams. Give me hell, I'll rise to the challenge. I may fall, but I'll always get back up and keep fighting. I will rise. I am insatiable fire. I not only survived my past, but I overcame it. If I can, you can too, and do even more. You are not alone. That is my quote.
That's great. I love that quote. You are currently volunteering as representative for the state of West Virginia for the nonprofit organization Foster Kids United. We'll go over that one first before we go to the other one, you know.
Yes, Foster Kids United is basically an organization that collects resources available for foster children in the system who age out. And basically all I do for them is see what resources are available in the state of West Virginia and try to provide them on a website, collective resource, for easy accessibility for kids like 16 to 21 to access when they age out of the system or are getting
that
ready to age out of the system. They can find them easier.
That reminds me of you being on the interviews at YouTube where people could look you up and look up Jessica Brown and find you in different interviews, including Aged Out Angels.
Oh, I remember Aged Out Angels, yeah. Greg's awesome.
Yeah, Greg Rapport.
Yep, Greg Rapport is awesome.
Yes, he's awesome. He's amazing.
You're also
the board of directors for I Believe You?
Yes, I'm actually the chair of the board. I Believe You, and I Believe You is an organization for women who have been abused. And as the title says, it's I Believe You. So it is a grassroots organization that is just getting started. So I don't have a whole lot of details on it yet. It's not my organization. It's in the works, I guess I should say. It's not even about nonprofit.
Yes, I was supposed to interview Ms. Bankston possibly Saturday. The founder of I Believe You.
Kenesha?
Uh-huh, yes. I thought of Miss Bankston. Tanisha Bankston, yes. And I see that you're going to do a life story overview and faces of foster care 3.
Pathology of different people who have either been in the foster care system or are foster families or parents that have been in the system or experienced with the system. And we share our story.
And I love how you say that the foster care is still your family.
We're talking about taking it to film as well.
That is awesome. That's amazing. Because the more that it gets out there,
a lot of things are in the works with that. So a lot remains to be seen on that.
Right. You can't hardly wait. I really think that will be a good show to show to bring awareness to people even more so. And I like how you said it, the foster care is your family.
Faces of Foster Care is kind of like a movement, I think. That's what it's been called. And I think it is. The different people coming together, telling their stories in the anthology. I think there's a big possibility that, we can make a difference, by coming together like that. There is a power of numbers, but not just numbers. There's people with various different experiences in the system, that could possibly, give feedback to change these problems, these cracks in the system like I felt it. That is one distinct possibility, but there's many. So, yeah.
Exactly. I'm so proud of everything that you're doing. And y'all do have get-togethers as well with the Foster Kids United, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm not on the board anymore, so I just represent the state of West Virginia. It's not anything I've done recently, though. So
okay,
I haven't done anything for them recently.
Yeah.
I do.
You're a busy woman. You've done a lot.
I'm always into something. Yes.
Yes. You're a busy woman. Yo, it's so funny. I've got to share this with y'all. That's okay with Jessica. She's got some cute kitties, and she's got one that's called Edward. So anytime she tried to get on video chat, that cat gets a little jealous and go up to her mouth like, no, you're going to give me the attention. Don't talk to nobody. Don't. He demands attention whenever he is awake. It's so cute. It's
yeah,
funny.
That's definitely Edward. He's funny. He's my little dance partner.
Do you actually have him in your arms and y'all dance?
I woke up from the floor into my arms unexpectedly if I turn the music on. He will chase me down and jump in my arms. He is my dance partner. He says, I want to dance.
I want to dance. Let's dance, Mama.
All I have to do is turn on some music, and he's right there. He's like, let's go.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Ready. Yeah, he is my dance partner.
Right. So cute seeing the different kitties, buying for your attention. And if he sees another cat right there, he's got to even get closer to you than the other cat. It's like, hey, now that's my spot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a cuddle bug.
It's always made me laugh thinking about that and seeing that on video.
And he definitely doesn't ask. He doesn't lose
he wouldn't take no for an answer, I don't think.
Yeah, no, he does not take no for an answer at all.
Well, but they are like your family.
Oh, yeah. They're my babies. Love my
kids. How many babies do you have right now?
Quite a few. I'm not going to own that one. Let's just say I'm a crazy cat lady.
Well, you know, it's however you feel like you want to live your life, and that's what you want to live. All power to you, you know what I'm saying?
Cats are more independent than dogs. Now, if I had that many dogs, yeah, I'd have some issues, but no. They're actually pretty independent, you know. When they want attention, they come up and stuff like that. But, you know, they pretty much entertain each other.
Yeah.
Dogs are completely dependent. Cats are a little more independent. And they do entertain
right.
each other. So it's not so bad.
Yeah, I'm still paying for a Zoom support group or whatever. And I think it might be good for somebody that maybe want to do a little bit of artwork once a week or something like that and have that for the survivors and work together doing some kind of craft or something like that. Creativity.
Oh, I love crafts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd
have to let
definitely
you
love
do one of the groups something like that and let you do that and head it up and say, hey, let's do this, you know. Because the creativity really, freedom to express, and you might mm-hmm. think like, I made a mistake. No. Sometimes the little mistakes is the little imperfections that makes the work look a lot better.
Personal touch.
Exactly. And I really like the scrapbook thing you sent me. You did a great job of card. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, those are my handmade cards. I created those a couple years ago. Each one's individual and unique. It's
right.
made specifically for who it goes to.
So it says now you're going out to go to a dual master's degree in social work and public administration. Are you still trying to go after that, or are you taking a little break at the moment, or what are you doing?
I'm doing the essays right now. The application is not actually due yet because I plan to start in the fall. But I'm also thinking of I'm going to research some of the other majors as well to make sure that those are the majors that I'm going to want that are going to benefit the most because it's going to cost money for me to obviously go. So, you know, I want to make sure that I go and invest that money in the most impactful way that's going to benefit me the most as far as, you know, the things that I need to know for the endeavors that I need, the goals that I have, basically. You know,
and I also want to encourage you on something because I know recently you had a little bout with somebody who tried to tell you basically
mm-hmm.
that you're trying to show you biblically wise on why God don't want you to do your story and everything, and you tell your impact on that. You tell your belief on that and what you found out to be really true on this issue.
Well, he's stuck in the Old Testament, number one. So I hope he enjoys slaughtering sacrifices to get his salvation because he is stuck in the Old Testament, you know, comparing me to Lot's wife for sharing my story. But I hate to tell him, but in the book of Revelation, it says otherwise. And that's in the New Testament.
Exactly.
Old Testament, New Testament. We don't slaughter things anymore for our salvation. So I'd say I think the New Testament probably applies now.
Exactly.
But if he's slaughtering animals and stuff to get his salvation, by all means, let him. But those rules just don't apply anymore.
Yes.
And that story didn't apply anyway. Because I'm not doing anything evil. She wanted evil things, and I don't.
And then a lot of these Christians that want to just say, hey, well, you're not supposed to say anything or that you're an abomination and everything. No, they're causing more of a problem for the evil to continue on by remaining silent, by doing nothing, by sweeping it under a rug. They're causing more and they're supposed to be Christians.
It allows
and
it allows it to fester and get worse.
Exactly.
Silence is the problem. Silence is the problem.
The Bible even
because
tells us to go seek justice for the oppressed and help the oppressed,
Let me put it this way, as far as the silence. Okay. So what can you do about something you don't know is existing or happening?
There ain't nothing you can do if you don't know it's existing or happening.
Bingo.
You're keeping a blind eye to it, a blind ear. It's trying to be deaf.
You can do anything about what they don't know about. You see? See how it becomes a problem? And allows it to fester. It allows it to perpetuate, And the darkness is allowed to continue and get worse because silence. Silence is a problem.
Yes, it is.
That's why I encourage people to share.
Exactly.
It's important for people to start sharing. There's a lot of shame, stigma, bias, and all these things associated with sexual abuse and abuse in general of children, of women, of all these things, and they keep it in silence and protect these quote abusers from getting, what they're really doing is protecting them from getting help for their problem.
Exactly.
They're not protecting them.
But we have a lot of friends who are male too that have been through the abuse as well.
It's no different than, whenever I would call the cops on my brother for getting violent with me, and my mom would lie for him. You know what I mean? It's no different. She prevented him from getting the help that he needed very badly by lying. She thought she was protecting
right.
him from the law, but what she was doing was preventing him from getting the help he needed.
Exactly.
It did not benefit him. It hurt him. Because if the law
exactly.
was done, was to get him to seek help. And somebody may have been able to help him. But
right, and get a lot of that hate and animosity out.
So it's just one of those things where she thought she was helping, but she was not helping. She was actually hurting. But she didn't see it.
Right, it shattered his innocence for sure.
Him in a position where he had no ability to seek help because, or no reason to seek help, really. He hid from the law. He hid from the help that he could receive. So any help that he might have gotten, basically he got cheated out of.
And that had
course,
to be...
Everybody has their own views of things. That's how I view it. To each their own. Everybody has a right to their opinion, But me personally, I think that the cops would have helped him, not hurt him. They would have got him to seek help.
Right.
You know, she thought, you know, toward the end that she could save him from himself, and she couldn't. In the end, he still destroyed himself.
Another way.
She did everything in her power she possibly could to try to save him, and there was no saving him.
It's like some friends of ours that had people that should help and everything. Well, we got a caller. Let me see. Hello.
Hey, Belle. It's Mike.
Hey, tell Jessica hello.
Hey, Jessica. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good, actually. I stopped in for a couple minutes just to hear what you guys are talking about. Sorry I missed the show.
It's okay.
It's okay. Glad to have you.
We're actually, I'm with a friend right now. We're studying out of the book of Genesis. She stepped away for a couple minutes, so I had to stop in to give you guys respect real quick.
Well, I appreciate that, man.
Is everything going good with you guys?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Awesome. You'll have to definitely come back and listen to the show later so that you'll
hear
more of her story.
I'd like to say a prayer. I'd like to say a prayer for you guys real quick, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Sure, go ahead.
I think Belle wanted me to jump in real quick. She asked me to come into the show, and she knows I'm good at prayer and like praying for people, so I would like to pray real quick for you guys. So I'm going to say it real quick and bow our heads before the Lord. All right. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask that you come before us today and put your righteous right hand and healing over Jessica and my friend Belle and help them and guide them today through their blog talk radio station session. I ask that you give them wisdom, understanding, obedience, discernment, and just stay with them, Lord, and just love them and just, you know, nourish them through all their hard times, whatever they're talking about, whatever the topic is. I'm sorry that I missed it earlier, but I ask that you also give me a chance to hear it later on when I have when time to do it. I ask that you just keep them, Lord, and you just, you know, help them through all their travels, their going outs and their coming ins, that you will see Justin, whatever you say is holy, will accept as amen. And I just ask that you're just there through anything they need, whatever they need, Lord, we ask that you provide for them, because, you know, you're our Holy Father and you will provide ultimately no matter what. So I'm sorry, like I said, that I missed what they were saying, but I ask that you just stay with them, Lord. I ask that you, all your angels and everybody up in heaven and you as well, your son, all stay with them and protect them. I ask that all your loving, holy, and precious, honorable name, Jesus Christ, the Father, God, be all the glory and the heavenly council. Amen and amen again.
Amen.
Amen. What do you guys talk about real quick? I missed it.
Well, she's given a rundown on her life and what she's up to. And she's an author, a poet, a thriver, an advocate, and overcomer. I'll let you go ahead and if you want to introduce yourself a little bit to him. Jessica?
You want me to introduce myself again?
Just a slight little introduction.
Okay. Well,
just whatever you want to tell them, you know.
Well, my name's Jessica. I'm a licensed CSW social worker with a pre-apprenticeship certification in manufacturing. I'm working on writing an autobiography, studying Spanish, French, Hindi, Arabic. And getting ready to have my story published in Faces of Foster Care 3. Someone who has a deep passion for helping empower and inspire others to overcome and be resilient despite their adversity. Short version.
Yes.
I'm a trauma
survivor.
I've been in the, I was in the system, I aged out, living in a group home, went on to college. So, I mean, I believe that, I'll share my quote with you, too. Here it is. With the hell I live, nothing can stop me from chasing my dreams. Give me hell, I'll rise to the challenge. I may fall, but I'll always get back up and keep fighting. I will rise. I am insatiable fire. I not only survived my past, but overcame it. If I can, you can too, and do even more. You are not alone.
Well, Raven has, isn't it, Michael?
Well, I guess I'm not as important as you guys right now.
You are very much important as well, Michael. You are.
Not much to tell about me. I mean, I'm a musician. I write music. I write all original songs. I help with horses 6 days a week, and I met Belle on the stream. That we used to hang out and do Bible studies and stuff. She's a really good woman, and I call her Belle because that's on her stream. That's why I call her Mama Belle. She's been a really good mentor to me. She's been really good to me, you know, a good friend, a very positive person. And, you know, she's just helped me through all of my hard times. When I'm with the horses in the morning, she's always there to pick up the phone and, you know, talk to me. So, you know, I love her. I care about her. She's definitely a very, 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 very important support in my life. So I'm glad that the Lord blessed her in my life and brought her before me. That's about it. I mean, there's not much to say about me. I mean, I have my own issues, but this is your guys' blog station. I'd like to jump on here sometime and share my story. That kind of be pretty awesome if I could do that.
Yeah,
but, you know, right now I don't want to hold you guys up because I was doing a Bible study with my friend, but I wanted to come in and just say hello and introduce myself, you know, because Belle asked me to come in here and introduce myself. So.
Well, I was getting ready to share a Bible verse, if you want to hear it.
Sure. Let's go.
Well, in regard to the guy who tried to silence me with a Bible reference, I went and got smart, and I went to a pastor that I knew. And this is what Bible verse she shared with me. Revelation 12:11. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters has been thrown down, the one who accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. And they did not love their life even when faced with death.
Amen.
Amen.
My
yeah,
favorite Bible verse. Okay,
Michael,
probably.
See, Michael, somebody tried to silence her and tried to say that she was being like Lot's wife and filler and salt and all that kind of stuff. So they were trying to
stop her from
speaking her story. Yeah, they were trying to.
Not to make
Gomorrah
know
her.
Her.
Yes.
Basically, I was. Disobedient to God and living in my past. So I should become a pillar of salt.
It's interesting because I just shared that with my friend today. We were talking about that. And basically the story of Sodom and Gomorrah was significant because people don't realize when Lot and Sarah left Sodom and Gomorrah because God burned that city, when they were leaving, God instructed Sarah to not look back because she loved Sodom and Gomorrah. She had a strong desire to stay in Sodom and Gomorrah, so she turned back, and that's why when God turned her to a pillar of salt, because basically what God wants us to do is when we're moving forward and we have to let go of things that bothered us, we trust in God to not look back. So basically that's what he does. He wants us to push forward and not look back. And it's hard for me sometimes because I always want to look back, always want to hold on to things. So like, that's not what God wants me to do. So, yeah, the Sodom and Gomorrah was a very good story. All the Bible stories are good. It's just how you apply it to your life.
See, and back then, I think it's more of an example of protecting Sarah because Sarah was going to look back and see her daughters and her family burnt and stuff and probably didn't want her
she
to
had
have
a strong
to.
Desire. Sodom and Gomorrah also had a lot of sexual immorality. It just is like Babylon. A lot of the cities like in Babylon and Egypt and Sodom and Gomorrah, these are all cities that had certain sins to them. Egypt had sins because they held Israelites in captivity. Sodom and Gomorrah was a bad city because of sexual immorality. Babylon was a bad city because they went against God. They were rebellious against God. And it's like a lot of those cities were just, you know, they were all examples of people pretty much turning against God and then putting his wrath on them.
And things we got to realize, though, that's the old law, and Jesus made a new law. Now we don't have to sacrifice animals or anything like that. We are cleansed by the blood of the Lamb. Praise God.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants us to be able to help the oppressed. It actually says that in Bible verses, that we are to defend and such on like that. We are to help others. We are not to... We are to share our stories and to help others persevere, because
we're supposed
evil
to carry each other's burdens.
And we're supposed to tell our stories to help others.
What Revelation, according to what she was saying, that she explained after the Bible verse, this states that they were overcome because of the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. Basically,
right.
Our stories are a testimony of God, for God.
Right.
Well, okay, so they clear things up with the Old Testament. All the sacrifices in the Old Testament, the reason why they were done with in the New Testament was when they did sacrifices at the altars. That was an old school way of people trying to present offering to God. That's why it's not in the New Testament. That was the old way, like the altars and sacrifices for God. Because they talk about the animals, all that's excused in the New Testament only for the reason that we don't do burnt offerings, we don't do sacrifices no more. That was a way that, like, the fat of animals and stuff that God was pleased with in the Old Testament, that was just an example of, like, all the people in the Old Testament pleasing God in their way of sacrificing animals. That's all that was. That had no significance.
Yeah, that was atonement for sins, but now we don't have that.
Yeah.
That's what it was for, atonement for sins. But with Christ, we don't have to worry about that because Christ did that.
Yeah, the sacrifice.
I went ahead and let you get on with your story since we got about 25 minutes left. Jessica?
Well, I already said it.
So your perseverance of getting that done.
But I think
and
I actually got on there and commented maybe. You might want to look and see what she said. I can't see it. I just saw it pop up.
Did what?
I think one of my friends may have commented on Blog Talk.
Oh, I don't see how I could go to it because it would start my sound. Are you able to go to it and see it? Would tell them that they could call in at 563-999-3517, and they could come make a comment.
I'll tell her.
Yeah. If they're listening right now at the blog talk, tell them 563-999-3517.
3999, what is it?
563-999-3517. It's got it at that blog talk link as well. Got it right above the call in to the host. That's the number.
Okay.
563-999-3517. And then thank you, Michael.
I just thought, Papa, I don't know what it says.
Yeah, I wish it. She would, because if I went over there and looked, it would be playing the echo of my sound, and that would not be good. So I can't go over there and take a look.
I want to see if I can.
I
got
to figure out how to. Oh, wait a minute, Harry. Wait a minute. Let's see if it's. I click chat right here. See if I can see it. I don't see the messages right here. Okay, it's not showing up nothing. So I did try to look right quick, but it's not showing up for me because it said episode info and chat. So I clicked on chat. But hi. Let's see.
I'll see if I can pull it up. Hold on.
Okay. See if it's like that.
He doesn't want to call me. I'm going to ask her if she left a message.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, she did leave a message.
Okay,
she did.
See what it says. Did you see the comment?
I'm trying to look. See if I can find it. Not really sure. It says zero comment. Or I'll pull it up, so I don't know. Maybe you have to be signed in to see the comment.
Well, I just signed in and I don't see it.
I can't sign. I don't have an account with Blog Talk, so I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, it says Facebook comments is where it's able to actually comment from Facebook. Wow. But it's not showing me the Blog Talk comments right here. It showed a picture of it a minute ago and I tried to go to it, but it did not let me see it. So I hope that she will be able to, can she write you maybe in Facebook Messenger?
I'm trying to figure out what it says.
Okay.
I don't know where it went.
Appreciate any comments and encouragement that we can have. But like I said, the Olo is the Olo and the sacrificed animals for their sins. It wasn't just about sacrificing for the sake of sacrificing. You know, it was for sacrificing for sins. And the Lamb of God's the one that's true sacrifice now, so that we don't have to do this sacrifices anymore. There's a lot more reasons behind that. Simplistic of that, there's a new law now. And like in StreamYard, you know, whenever, you know, I'm not going
to. And she did leave one. I just don't know what it said. She might be busy right now. I don't know. So,
like it's like with my banners. When I do the Blog Talk Radio, I mean the StreamYard YouTube, I always like to do these certain Bible verses. The first one is Matthew 18, verse 6. But whoso shall be one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Another one is Matthew 18, verse 10. Take heed that you despise not one of these little ones, for saying to you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. And in Colossians 3:21, fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. Even in the Older Testament, where it's got Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Then in Proverbs 28, verse 5, evil men understand not judgment, but they that seek the Lord understand all things. Those are Bible verses that I like to use for when I do my YouTube channel, like as I said, to try to prove that we are to tell our stories and to help others. The O Law is O Law. It's used as an example. Hello, 208. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you, sister?
I'm doing okay. Thank you. Mr. Aaron.
Neither one yet.
How would you like to say anything to Jessica?
I love you, sister. You got so much courage and strength. It's empowering just to listen to you speak and to witness what you do. It's amazing. Keep it going, girl. You're welcome.
Hey, darling.
But I just popping up here for a minute. I got a major migraine going on, so I'm gonna get out of here. But I just wanted to show some support and say hi and Liz.
Thank you. I hope you feel better, Sue.
Hope you feel better.
I will or I won't. It'll go which way it's gonna go, but I'll be all right.
Love you, man.
Love you too, sister. Bye.
Bye bye. Yeah, what were you about to say, Jessica?
I got the message she left.
Okay.
She said, I have been her close friend. Some of us walked out. I lived in the same neighborhood she did. Her dad tried to run us neighborhood kids over one day because we didn't include his kids, but we knew he wasn't allowed around them.
Well, that shows a sick twist that she's validating your story on what had happened.
That was one of the neighbors.
A horrific. Exactly. I'm sure they were afraid to do anything as well that endangered them.
Oh, well, they're the ones that moved out because they were going to kill him.
Exactly.
You know,
he put them kids in danger,
to
too, by shooting. Was he one of them that he actually shot at also for the turning around in the driveway?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My dad was very known for pulling guns on people, neighbors.
Luckily, nobody was killed and all that.
Yeah. We were seen many times. For that. Added bonus, not only did my mom have the pleasure of paying his child support, she had the pleasure of paying for his lawsuits where he liked to pull guns on people.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I feel like if she would have went. Right.
She had the pleasure.
It is. And the thing about it is she would have said and try to do something on her own, a lot of times they give a slap on the wrist and let her back out, then that's going to further put her in danger even more.
Well, you have to think about where I live, too, because, I mean, well, technically, law in the book says a husband can beat his wife on the courthouse stairs on a Sunday.
Uh-huh.
In Huntington, West Virginia. It's actually listed under stupid laws online.
Yeah, and it's like there's a rule of thumb law that the husband can beat the wife for so long as it's something that's smaller than his thumb, which is stupid.
Because
some knives are smaller than even the thumb, you know, the blades and stuff. It's like, get real, people. Ice picks anything, you know?
But, I mean, you have to also look at how domestic violence is treated in general.
Right. There's been a lot of law enforcement that's had to go to jail for them doing it as well.
The response to domestic violence, you're talking back in the 1990s, was even less than it is now. And it's still insufficient.
Yes, it is. I want to be sure to thank your friend for letting writing in and saying that where she could be heard as well, what she witnessed in your story, and it's part of her story as well.
Yeah, she's part of my story.
And it's great that y'all are friends today.
We weren't allowed to be friends then. Actually, that was the neighbor that also was the one that my dad backhanded me across the face because he thought I was going to want to go play with.
Oh, wow.
Knocked me plumb over. I was about 4-ish. Yeah, I was going to have to go on the driveway. My dad thought I was going to have to go play with her. He backhanded me across the face, knocked me over. Just because he thought I was going to have to go play with neighborhood kids.
That's stupid.
So, she's not kidding whenever she says, wasn't allowed. Yeah.
Exactly. That's sad to see that you could not grow up and have the proper friendship that most kids can. And we as child abuse survivors, a lot of us didn't have the choices where we could make friends, where we could have friends over and such.
My story
involves approved on coming over there, you know, for their own whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. My life story actually involves a lot of different lives. You know, I basically had impede on a lot of people's lives just to try to stay safe. And it wasn't really a choice
right.
that I had. It was literally me trying to stay safe. Like that particular neighbor, apparently I even fell asleep on her back porch.
Oh, you did?
Apparently I fell asleep on her back porch. Mm-hmm, sure did.
Well,
I don't remember.
I guess
that.
That's one of the places, that might have been one of the places where you ran and hid one time.
Hey, I went where I was safe.
Wherever you could. Exactly.
Literally on the back. Fell asleep. I went
you
where I was
You did what you could to survive.
I did.
Because no adult was doing the job, and you had to take it upon yourself for survival.
It was survival.
And I'm glad you're so resilient and fought. And even if they want to put you as a difficult child, per se, they didn't live your life. They don't know what you went through.
I'd say I was a very big pain in the butt. I was definitely not
on
the street. I myself hell on wheels. It's not every day you find somebody that'll run down the street in their bra and run away.
Yeah, the thing about it is, if they would have lived that kind of life, they might not even have survived it.
From jumping out of a social worker's noose to running down the street in my bra, that was me as a teenager. I was wild. Now, you wouldn't catch me doing that now.
Right. Well, at least as an adult, you got more say-so, you know, where you are, where you go, and
that's why
you're
I'm
not being held down or tied down or beaten down to be where you're at or go wherever you go. And
right.
So now you can be where you want to be.
Yeah.
And who you want to be and strive. With the exception of, I really think it's comical about how well you wrote a recent paper for this one place, and then they write you back and say, really, you're too old for it, but yet they keep writing you, trying to get you involved
yeah.
with doing that, and they keep writing you back, well, I'm sorry, you're too old. And like, what do you think? They know that they already wrote you several times saying you're too old. Did they still want you to still
interview?
Put something in there, but then they don't want you because you're too old. It's like, excuse me, enough rejection is rejection. So.
Yeah, I think they like rejected because I'm not eligible. I don't know. I really don't know what's going on with that. Yeah, they keep writing me, wanting me to interview, knowing I'm too old, and then they tell me I'm too old. So I think they just like to tease me.
I think they're still basically in a war. Like, hopefully they'll end up changing the age factor on that. Because really, age shouldn't matter on that type of thing when you got someone that's going to actually help their cause and speak for their cause.
Well, if my age was not a determining factor in their eligibility guidelines, I think I probably would have got the position.
Ah.
Because they keep contacting me.
Exactly. They love what you wrote. But
they keep contacting me even though I'm too old. Or they just like to tease me.
It's like they want you, but you're too old, you know?
Disorganized. I don't know. I don't know. Of course, I could write a book on the things I don't know. I'm a constant work in progress. I'm always learning, always growing. So,
maybe you need to. That's one reason I'd like you to talk to Blackstone. He had a fork thing before, and I think he would wish somebody to start that up again. I had to end up talking to him about that, you know.
Okay. Well, I missed his interview because I had some other things to take care of. I tried to listen to it earlier today, but it wouldn't work. So. I'm not sure what's going on with that. If you can get it to work, I can watch it or listen to it, I mean.
Yes. Hopefully it's working. I have to go back and check it out.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just cursed with technology.
Sometimes there's some places that try to shut somebody up on that story as well. But he did give out some big names in that. He'll be back again Sunday at 2 o'clock your time. Yeah, he'll start off again with the story that he was given about how that one person on his actually had convinced a girl to get in his car, going to go buy her some ice cream, and then took her to go rape her. And he forgot to get her tennis shoes off. But she got her ground, and she was 11 year old, and he's like in his 30s, that guy was, John Ramsey. And she went and kicked him in the groin and the gills, and she got away from him.
Ah. I'll try to tune in on Sunday.
Yeah, so he'll go back over that, and he's trying to remember whether or not that actually happened in West Virginia or not. He can't specifically for sure know, but he was thinking it happened in Huntington, West Virginia. And I said, that's around a friend of mine's, you know, stomping areas, you know.
Well, you know,
then I thought about how you always ran, and I just pictured, you know, that you being the spitfire that would have been the one that would have kept them there and done that, too. You know what I'm saying? So I thought that fit in really well. So I hope that y'all touch base. He did. I think he accepted your friend's request that Book of Faces?
I accepted it. Or I sent him one.
Yes.
I can't remember which. Yeah. I looked it up.
I told him that.
That's the request or accepted, yes.
Right.
But I'll write him a message as well. See if we can't touch base.
Yes. Yes. Maybe after I get off of here, I'll try to call him and maybe try to get the call, try to call you both up or something like that, get y'all talking.
Oh, okay.
Try to see if I could get them on the line, you know. Well, have you got any words of encouragement? It's like 90 seconds, it said, so it's close to 60 seconds.
No matter what anybody goes through from in this life, basically, you can rise above it. You can get through it, come out stronger. It is true that what doesn't kill you does make you stronger. Never give up. Keep going. There's always light on the other side of that tunnel.
I want to say thank you so much for coming. You are a true inspiration to a lot of people. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.